forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest is Dr. Bonnie Kaplan. She's the author of The Better Brain. She's a professor. She deals with philanthropy. So we're going to talk about the book, The Better Brain, and ADHD and youth, and a whole bunch of topics in this area. So welcome, Bonnie.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, tell me a bit about your background. How did you get interested in these areas in the first place?
Well, I got, my main focus eventually in my career was the role of nutrition in terms of brain development and brain function. And the reason I got into that area really has to do with the way I was educated. I was in experimental psychology and then psychophysiology, physiological psychology, and then postdocs in neuroscience, neurophysiology. And so I, as my husband always says, I'm not really a psychologist. I'm mostly interested in the biological basis of behavior. And if you're interested in the biological basis of behavior and also behavior when it's not, when there are problems with function, you have to pay attention to nutrition because nutrients are the cofactors that make our brain metabolism work. And so it's absolutely essential to be interested in nutrition. It blows my mind that most people don't know that. I've had people say, what? Nutrition has nothing to do with brain health or brain function.
What keeps you alive for 80, 90 years? Food, water, air. But no, it's not important at all. No, they don't affect physiology. Come on.
People are funny.
Well, I've heard from doctors they only get maybe one day of nutrition and, medical school. It's just very, it's really minimized and, not looked at very much. But so you ran into this, and then where did this take you from there? You keep going with your story.
Okay. Well, like a lot of people, my career zigged and zagged, but I kept coming back to nutrition. And it was very hard to study, in part in the 1980s. I ended up dealing with so many fanatics that I just couldn't stand it. I have a predisposition that is not not attracted to fanaticism of any kind, Richard. And so I found that really hard when people would say things like, I believe in nutrition. And I think, I never said this to a family, but I would think, on a good day, I might believe in God, but nutrition's not a matter of faith. It just is. It's what makes our metabolism work, what makes our brains work.
What if you tell people you're fanatically against fanaticism?
I've never done that.
You're a zealot against fanatics. Really funny.
Yes, in a way I am. So anyway, I got back into, I remember going home and saying, I've had it. I've got to find, I'm going to go back to some of the other things I've done, behavior genetics, etc. Why am I studying nutrition? I can't deal with these people. And I did leave it for about 10 years. And then I got interested again because there were some people in Alberta who I really respected, who showed me data that they had collected when they gave formula of vitamins and minerals to children, and the children got better. And these were kids who were diagnosed with ADHD. So that drew me back in again, and I continued. That was in about 1999 or something. And so for the rest of my career, I studied nutrient treatment of mental health problems. And I found such amazing brick walls that I just don't understand why people don't want to learn about something which is so fundamental to how our biology works.
What particular mental conditions have you found are the most amenable to, the proper nutrition?
If you look across all of the studies that I'm familiar with, first of all, when someone gets better, even if they're selected to be in a study because they have depression, ADHD, bipolar, whatever, when they get better. And not everybody gets better, you know, because there are other causes of mental health problems. But when they get better, it's across the board because their entire brain becomes healthier. And it's not just symptoms in a single category. But the what I would call the transdiagnostic symptoms, which are the most amenable to the treatment with micronutrients, meaning minerals and vitamins, the easiest to treat are those involving mood dysregulation. You know, people with explosive rage, with mood that goes up and down, irritability, which is in every diagnostic category, I think. These are all mood dysregulation, people who cannot regulate the way they react to things.
What do you mean irritability is, I didn't understand what you're saying about it. It shows up in every kind of mental problem, or what do you mean?
Yeah, it's if you look at diagnostic criteria, something like irritability is there for depression. It's there for mania. It's there for ADHD. It's there in maybe not the cardinal symptoms, but an associated symptom for autism. What have I left out? Anxiety. Irritability just crops up as a characteristic, I would call it, of many, many diagnostic categories. You know, the diagnostic categories are not perfect. I know we need them. Families need them to get services. Researchers need them so that we can publish our papers, you know. But I always say God didn't create our brains with the DSM in hand. So we don't have a little box for depression and a little box for anxiety, etc. We basically have, well, I think I better stop there. I have my own general diagnostic category that's on my wish list for what we should say about brain health. Do you want me to go there?
Well, instead, so have you found that you're able to reduce irritability in people depending on whatever condition they have, or because it's so universal, there's ways to improve it with nutrition regardless of what the other underlying condition is?
I think there's no clear line between those two options you gave me. Basically, if you give me a family who reports that living with this child is like walking on eggshells, because you never know what's going to trigger an explosion, you know, I would give you about a 95% probability that we could make that much, much better with nutrition.
So what does that mean? What are some of the nutritional protocols that you've helped people with?
So I'm not a clinician, Richard. So when you say I help people, I don't help people. I study them. But seeing benefits in people who are part of our clinical research projects, mine and my other colleague, has been very gratifying. And the kinds of things that improve, I've already described to you. But the way to make those characteristics improve stretches over several kinds of interventions that are all nutrition-based. The number one thing is to get people to eat a Mediterranean whole foods kind of diet and totally get rid of what we used to call junk food, ultra-processed rubbish. Because the ultra-processed rubbish, even if it's not directly harming a person's brain, it is replacing the nutrient that you should be consuming. I mean, if I gave the statistics on what a hungry organ your brain is, you would understand when I say that every minute that you are putting food into your mouth over the course of a day, you should be thinking about what you need to feed your brain, because your brain is sucking up a disproportionate amount of the nutrients for it to have active metabolism. So to synthesize the neurotransmitters, to have appropriate breakdown, so forth, you need a constant flow of about 30 minerals and vitamins. So you can get that if you are eating a healthy diet. For some people, that's enough to get them onto a healthy whole foods kind of diet. For other people, we think that they have an inherited predisposition to need an unusual amount of certain of those micronutrients, and we don't have adequate tests yet that will really tell us. Like I can't test you, Richard, and say, oh, this test shows that your brain would be working optimally if you were getting an unusually large amount of magnesium every day. And maybe for me, I would need an unusually large amount of the B vitamins every day. There's no test for that. There's only a chance.
There's not even a question, even if it's in range at the top or bottom of the range or middle. Some people need out of range to saying to feel good.
We believe that's so because there are about 50 genetic mutations that have been identified for physical health. And there's a very senior biochemist named Bruce Ames who summarized 50 of those in 2002. But we don't have the data on mental health. But we know the phenomenon, and I can explain it to you, I think, simply in terms of the biochemistry. There are enzymes that have to make the conversion of a chemical, say chemical A, to be converted to chemical B. And most enzymes work within a range of needing a certain amount of cofactors to make that happen. But sometimes certain pathways, the enzymes seem to need an unusually large amount of the cofactors. That's why I think mental illness is a reflection of sluggish brains. I think sluggish pathways is the universal problem that we're treating by increasing nutrients for metabolic processes. Does that make sense?
I've heard some people, yeah, they don't have pathways to clear certain metabolites. Other ones may, you know, make misfolded proteins, like people with hypermobility disorder in their joints. Some people's pathways may be overactive, their metabolic pathways. So, I mean,
that's right.
This is what I've heard, but what have you observed?
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now, back to the show.
Well, what we've observed is that especially when you see a lot of mental disorders running in family, that there is a very significant number of the people get better if they don't just improve their diet, but in addition, if they take a broad spectrum micronutrient formula. And so that suggests to me that, unfortunately, most of those micronutrients are at safe doses, and you know that nobody is ever studying mega doses or unhealthy or toxic things. But they may be, you know, you're able to absorb a higher amount of what you need, and then you basically pee out any excess, right? And so that it suggests that some people do better if they not only clean up their diet, but also take a micronutrient formula. And we now have more than 50 peer-reviewed scientific publications on the broad spectrum formulas that were developed here in Alberta. And so that's why I co-wrote that book with my former student, Julia Rutledge, who's on the faculty at University of Canterbury in Christchurch, New Zealand now. And we wrote the book because with so many articles, which the media refuses to cover, we just thought that we've got to educate the public because the media is not, there's a real blackballing going on. They don't want to know anything except drug, and they won't cover any of our articles, even when they make the front cover of the most senior psychiatric journals in North America, which has happened on more than one occasion. That is not being covered by the media. So we wrote our book for the general public.
So how does this get into the hands? So it's what, someone will read the book and then they'll speak to their doctor and they'll say, hey, have you considered this or that? Like, how do they take the information and actually use it to help themselves?
Well, first of all, I hope what they do is clean up their dietary pattern. That's really important. And a massive summary umbrella review just came out in, I think it was British Medical Journal, about 4 weeks ago, covering all the studies for both physical and mental health, roughly 9.8 million people in all of these studies. And they showed very clearly that depression and anxiety are worse, more likely in people who are eating ultra processed rubbish. So we know that that's a really important thing for our brain. But secondly, I think you're asking me, Richard, if they want to try one of the micronutrient formulas in addition, where do they go? Now, I'm not affiliated with any of the companies who make these, and nor is Julia, nor are any of the scientists. We've seen how big pharma has corrupted the mental health literature by paying for the research for the last 50 years, and we didn't want to go down that pathway. So that's one of the reasons that I've been raising funds for my junior colleagues, because without somebody from Big Pharma, it's hard to do the research. So there are a couple of websites I could give you and put them in your program notes, but please indicate that I'm not affiliated with them. Don't ask me which one to go to, but go look at these websites and you can buy them on your own. Should you go to your doctor? Yes, go to your doctor. Talk to your doctor. Show them some of the published research. But a lot of doctors will say to you, mental health has nothing to do with your nutrient intake. And I know that.
What if I go to the head of Pfizer? You think he'll tell me the truth?
The truth? No way.
I know, I'm just teasing you.
Yeah.
You'd be the worst person in the world to go to.
Oh, yeah. I actually thought maybe you knew the head of Pfizer.
No,
you're not going to get anywhere.
I don't know, Albert Bourla.
No. When a physician, though, if you were to go to your physician told you, as so many of them do, look, I don't think that there's any good evidence that taking these micronutrients helps the brain. What they're really saying to you is, get all of my continuing medical education from the pharmaceutical companies, and they haven't told me that vitamins and minerals help brain health, and I haven't gone to look at the 50-some articles myself.
So what are some case studies that you've seen in the literature or in studies or anecdotally? Tell me what things you've seen.
Sure. Well, rather than I'd like to go a little above anecdotal. There are randomized placebo-controlled trials that are maybe too much for a podcast, but I'll tell you one of the case studies that is peer-reviewed and published. And that is a young boy who I didn't know initially, but he had a lot of mental health problems, depression, anxiety, et cetera. And then he began hallucinating and had signs of a childhood psychosis when he was about 10 years old. And he ended up in the mental health unit of the regional children's hospital. I still didn't know him, but what happened was he was an inpatient for 6 months. And the very well-trained psychiatrist tried him on a whole bunch of different drugs, and he didn't get better. And so he was sent home, and his mother had to quit work and try to convince him to eat because he was convinced he had delusions. He was convinced that his food was poisoned. He felt he had to pray incessantly because he was convinced that he had killed someone. He was also convinced he had committed adultery at age 10. It was, really quite psychotic. And he heard voices and he saw things, and the voices said some awful things to him. So when he was sent home, his mother had heard about our early research on the broad spectrum formulas here in Alberta. And she called me and she asked me to go with her to meet the new psychiatrist they would be taking the boy to as an outpatient. It happened that I knew that psychiatrist, and I just thought, oh, she'll never go along with this. She's a straight by-the-book, drug treatment psychiatrist. Little did I know she had gotten quite fed up with seeing the bad effects of medications in children. And so she said the honest thing to say to them. She said, look, I don't know if this micronutrient formula will help your son, but I don't have anything better to offer. And so they decided to monitor his symptoms, and then I put them together and we published it as a case report. And Dr. Rodway was the name of the psychiatrist. And what we witnessed was a complete remission of his psychosis symptoms, although some of them took a full year. A lot of mood regulation. You can see improvements in 2 weeks, but he was really very, very sick. And his symptoms of obsessional prayer disappeared and so forth. And that was in 2009. And since that time, he, on one time when he was a teenager, he got, he was rebellious and said, I'm not taking these micronutrients anymore. And the symptoms started to come back. So he now takes them quite compliantly, and he has not cost our healthcare system any money. He does not see a psychiatrist. He doesn't see any kind of mental health professional as long as he takes his micronutrients, which, of course, his family has to pay for. So it was quite a strong case, and the 6 months of treatment on micronutrients immediately after inpatient hospitalization, we called in a health economist who pulled all the data and showed that his expenses were 2% what they had been during his inpatient period. So all of us as taxpayers should care about this kind of thing too. But I am not saying, this was published in the British Medical Journal case report, I am not saying that everyone responds that well. Okay, it's very important that your audience hear me say that.
Okay. Did this guy know that he had these problems? Did he know once he stopped taking them and the symptoms came back, say, they were right, I do need to take these?
That's correct. And he's very close to his mother, and he reported them, and the whole family freaked out, right? Not that I haven't met either of that, but they went into total panic thinking his psychosis was coming back, and indeed it was. But he illustrates there is good reason to think that he has an inherited predisposition for more than the usual amount of micronutrients, because although I never did an evaluation of his dietary intake, I was told that he ate a very healthy diet, and that wasn't enough to control the symptoms, but adding the micronutrients did. Taking them away resulted in symptom return, putting him back on them. Well, he's now, how old is he? He must be late 20s by now, 10 in 2000. Oh, he must be over 20s. And he works part-time. He's doing very well.
How do you know that some people need more of a particular nutrient than the guidelines would say?
I don't. Nobody on earth does. There are some tests that naturopathic doctors tend to do for metabolites, to look for differences in your urine and blood, but they're very indirect, and they don't, there's the only way to know whether this is going to help someone is to try it. And that's uncomfortable for me to say because they're not cheap. Although the two companies that are in Alberta that are making them now, I think both have charitable arms and they support people who need to take them.
They're more expensive than going to psychiatrists and taking drugs and paying copays and all that?
No, unfortunately, drugs, especially like where Julia lives in New Zealand, they're free. So it's really hard to compete with free, isn't it? But most people feel so much better on them.
What are some of these micronutrients? Like, what are some of the top ones that are included in these formulations that seem to help?
Okay, so don't ask me which are the important ones, which is sort of what you just did, asking which are the top ones, because if I could show you, a metabolism in the brain, and we do in chapter 2 of our book, you'd understand why we need all of them. The way we get, may I explain how we get the nutrients and why we need all of them? Just a few sentences.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so people don't think about how we get the nutrients that we need for our brain. So, we need the omega-3 fatty acids. That's why we should be eating fish a couple times a week. We need amino acids, so we need to be eating protein. And we need phytonutrients, and there are thousands of them that provide the color and strength of a lot of our plants. But the basis, the foundation, is the micronutrients, which are the minerals and vitamins. So let me tell you where they come from. If our soil is healthy, it should have about 15 minerals in it. And plants are then put into that healthy soil, and they absorb the 15 minerals, and they manufacture approximately 15 vitamins. Then we come, this is a brilliant thing, by the way, we can't do that. We can't manufacture those vitamins out of minerals, but plants can. They're amazing. Then we come along and we eat the crop that come from those healthy plants, and we consume a range of about 30 vitamins and minerals. Or we eat the animals that eat the plant, and we get some of them that way. That's why people who are not vegetarians have a second chance to get more of the vitamins and minerals through the meat from the cattle, etc., that have been eating the plants. So that's how we get roughly 30 vitamins and minerals. And I can show you a simple diagram that has just one tiny microscopic corner of the tryptophan metabolism for the synthesis of serotonin in your brain that uses at least 18 of those micronutrients. So how can I say that one or two are the most important? It just doesn't make sense. We need them all. We need them in balance.
Well, what are some of them?
Well, every vitamin you have ever heard of and every mineral you've ever heard of. How's that for a simple answer? The vitamins range from A, all the B vitamins, C, D, E. There are also things like biotin, which are not yet named as vitamins. But anyway, all of the vitamins. The B vitamins are very important for the brain, and there's other research to show how valuable they are, in particular as a subgroup. And then the minerals, everything from calcium, zinc, copper, magnesium, manganese, molybdenum, which is a trace mineral. All of the 15 minerals that you can think of should be in your food supply. But they have to be in balance.
Some people don't think of them. You know, selenium.
Yeah.
Maybe no one thinks about
selenium. That's right. Yeah. Name some more. I'll tell you if they're on the list. But they all are.
Okay. So a protocol would be to have these multivitamins with trace minerals in them. And then how long, can it take ballpark for people to start feeling differently than they did before?
Well, for children with explosive rage, we've published data showing that you can see some benefit within 2 or 3 days, but it's not full benefit. And we've also experienced, although this is not published, some people just taking minerals, seeing that change. Some of the nutrition experts we talked to think that for some of the rage attacks and everything, minerals may be more important than vitamins, but then they always say, but you have to have them all together because they work together. Don't look for magic bullet, you know? So that's the ideal of 2 or 3 days. But really for a lot of disorders, depression, anxiety, you have to wait at least 2 weeks. And really, you don't see optimal benefit for at least 3 months. Some people report a year later, they're still feeling stronger and more resilient.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the book that you've written, it talks about why, it has case studies, it has, you know, suggestions on how people can evaluate it for themselves, if these things will help, you know, minerals. Is that what the book talks about?
It does. It gives an overview of the research, especially in chapter 11. It has a chapter of recipes. We really emphasize that the first step, actually, I'd like to distinguish this. The first step is to clean up your diet, and we can all do better than we're doing, you know? But don't try one of the exotic, strict diets. That is not to say that, you know, intermittent fasting or ketogenic diet or gluten-free diet, that they don't help some people. I'm not saying that they don't help some people, but if you live in the mental health world, you want people to avoid failure experiences because they already have all this negative self-talk. It's saying that I'm worthless, I can't do anything, I fail at everything I try, etc. And some of those exotic, I call them exotic, but they're diets that require a lot more work. They really can result in people quitting, getting discouraged, not doing well. I'm not saying don't try them or that there's no data. I'm not saying that. But do the easy thing first because you'll feel so much better somewhere down the road. Then you can try one of the ones that require a little more work. And the way to feel better first is clean up your diet. Eat whole foods. That's why we have a recipe chapter. Eat whole, real food. And you can, by the way, one study has shown that it'll save you 20%. Of your food budget. Does that surprise you, Richard? Because we always hear about how, you know, oh, it's going to cost too much to eat a Mediterranean style diet. Are you surprised at that?
Yeah, why is that?
Well, it's because not everybody has to eat steak and lobster when they go on a Mediterranean diet. But if you learn how to cook with dried peas, dried lentils, dried beans, all the legumes, and, you know, you can live on pennies a week, practically. And there are so many recipes. You don't have to rely. Don't buy our book for the recipes. You can just Google the words recipe, lentils, because they cook so fast. Unlike the beans, you have to, you know, buy them in cans or cook them for a long time. But just put in recipe, lentils, and then maybe, I don't know, spinach. And you'll have 5 million recipes in 1 second. You know, there are that many recipes out there. So it makes sense. And also buy canned food and buy frozen food. They're very healthy. A bag of frozen peas was flash frozen right after it was harvested. And it might well be more nutritious than the fresh peas sitting in the produce department, which maybe have been there 2 or 3 days. Canned beans, I wouldn't buy canned lentils. That doesn't make sense because they cook so fast. But there's so much that you can do once you get a little bit creative.
Okay, I understand. Have you seen a difference between people that have a pretty good diet versus, they don't mess up at all? You know, having a little bit of something that may not be good for you versus having none of it. Have you seen a big difference?
That relates to one of the studies that I would like to have done. I've retired from active duty. I still write and lecture and so forth, but I don't run studies anymore. I'm what's called Professor Emeritus. And so one of the things that I've been doing, as you know, is raising money. Both, I have two charitable funds, donor advised charitable funds, one in the US and one in Canada, to support my junior colleagues because we were losing researchers because they couldn't get their research funded because the funding agencies will not fund broad spectrum micronutrient formula studies much either. It's just there's a real blanket rejection of nutrients in pill form. Can I answer your question?
Yeah, I was saying if someone's having a problem and they eat really well, but every once in a while they mess up, you know, maybe once a week they have processed foods versus someone that is hardcore, they don't have any processed foods. Will they do a lot better? Do some people just be like crazy strict? You
know? No, well, you're talking to someone who is not a fanatic and is not a purist. And I always say life is not worth living if I can't occasionally have a chocolate chip cookie, Richard. So I don't think there's any evidence that you can never have something that's off the diet again. But if you just clean up your act 6 out of the 7 days and don't totally go nuts on the seventh day, I would imagine that would be fine. But no one's done that study, but I don't think there's any reason to be that fanatical about it.
Well, it could help people where they're like, oh, I don't have to be fanatical. Or it could, you know, make some people sad where they feel like they do.
Well, if they go off, you know, their diet 1 day a week and they recognize that that's the day they feel yucky and sad, they won't go off their diet as much. I mean, they might have a cookie occasionally, but they won't throw it all to the wind for a whole day because it doesn't feel good.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So your book is out at where? On Amazon, Kindle? Is it on Audible?
Everywhere.
Where?
Yeah,
okay. That's
everywhere.
Great. And how else can people keep tabs on your work? Your organization.
I'm so glad you asked that question because I'd love it if you put my website in the program notes. And there are too many Bonnie Kaplans in the world. So my website is BonnieJKaplan.com.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for the interview.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.